It's 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov Wednesday met President Donald Trump at the White House. Mr. Trump expressed optimism the horrible killing in Syria can be stopped.
We're going to do very well with respect to Syria. I think things are happening that are really, really, really positive. We're going to stop the killing and the death. We had a very, very good meeting with Mr. Lavrov, and it was I thought it was very, very good.
The president said he underscored the need for Russia to rein in the Bashar al-Assad regime as well as Iran and its proxies. Mr. Lavrov met earlier with Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. He called both U.S. men people of action, describing their discussions as free of ideology, a reference to the previous Obama administration. The Russian diplomat said relations are beginning at a very low level, but added that they can and should contribute jointly to the settlement of many urgent global issues. University of Denver International Affairs Professor Jonathan Edelman said Mr. Trump believes, on Syria at least, that's possible.
He clearly is confident that he can make some progress here. And that's basically what he was saying, that there are issues that the United States and Russia could get together on, possibly Iran, although mainly on Russian terms, and that will be a problem as well.
Mr. Lavrov said he believes the U.S. is interested in taking part in a Russian proposal to create four so-called de-escalation zones in Syria. The Libyan Coast Guard Wednesday intercepted hundreds of migrants jammed on a wooden boat and returned them to Tripoli after warning a ship preparing to take them to Europe. Coast Guard Colonel Bujela Omar said he received a distress call north of Sabratha, about 19 nautical miles from shore. The migrants numbered approximately 300. Libya has become the main departure point for migrants hoping to reach Europe by sea. This is VOA News. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan Wednesday called on the U.S. to reverse its decision to arm Syrian Kurds, part of the Syrian Democratic Forces that are driving toward the Islamic State-held city of Raqqa.
DAEŞ terör örgütüyle mücadele.
Mr. Erdogan said the fight against the Islamic State, or Daesh, should not be led with another terrorist organization, a reference to the YPG Kurdish militia. He said such a move would destabilize Syria and the region. The White House has announced its decision to arm the Kurds and their Arab militia partners to liberate Raqqa. Turkey considers the YPG a terrorist organization. Pentagon spokesman Colonel John Dorian in Baghdad, meanwhile, said the SDF seized the key Syrian town of Tabqa and the country's biggest dam some 40 kilometers west of Raqqa.
Tabqa is an extremely dangerous battle zone. As they advance, SDF forces encounter ISIS snipers who are using apartment buildings, hospitals, and mosques in the dense urban terrain to mask their positions.
He said some 30,000 people have been displaced by the fighting that began in March. In Venezuela, more anti-government protests aimed at socialist President Nicolas Maduro turning violent. At least one more person was killed Wednesday as protesters lobbed bottles and bags of excrement at security forces who responded with tear gas in the capital, Caracas. Meanwhile, the Venezuelan Health Ministry said the number of women dying in childbirth rose a staggering 66% last year. At the same time, more than 11,000 infants died, a 30% increase. In Brazil, former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva appeared in federal court Wednesday to give testimony on corruption allegations. Lula accused of receiving a beach apartment in return for lucrative government contracts. He is implicated in several other corruption cases and is a high-profile defendant in a widening corruption probe. He has insisted he is innocent of all wrongdoing. South Sudan's ousted army chief, Paul Malong, dismissed suggestions that he'll join a revolt and retaliate against the government in Juba. His removal followed a series of resignations by top military officials who've accused Malong and others of pursuing ethnic warfare and committing war crimes in the country's civil war. In Nigeria, the parents of more than 80 schoolgirls freed from their insurgent group Boko Haram are waiting to be reunited with their daughters. The girls abducted from the northeast village of Chibok 3 years ago were part of a swap Saturday that returned several Boko Haram commanders. They have been in the capital Abuja, some 900 kilometers away. It was a quiet day on Wall Street Wednesday, although the Nasdaq Composite, a barometer of the tech industry, reached another record high close of 6,129. Meanwhile, the price of oil surged 3% as fuel stockpiles in the U.S. dwindle. U.S. crude above $47 a barrel, Brent crude above $50. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Story Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. An international conference on Somalia opens today, Thursday, in London.
Somalia is a top African conflict priority for us because of the threats that an unstable, insecure Somalia poses to the region.
Nick Kay is Britain's special envoy to the Horn of Africa region. A Ugandan activist charged with allegedly insulting President Museveni has been granted bail. Nigeria's information minister describes as an unnecessary distraction a controversy surrounding President Buhari's letter to parliament. And South Sudan's new army chief has been sworn in with an eye on the country's ongoing conflict.
I know it's a difficult task, given the fact that the country is in conflict by itself, but making use of our good human resource, we'll be able to manage the situation and we'll exit from this conflict.
General James Adjongo is South Sudan's new army chief. Nigeria and South Sudanese refugees return to homes destroyed by war. A number of African countries are developing space technology, and Democrats demand a special prosecutor after FBI Director Comey is fired. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Humanitarian agencies operating in Somalia say they are concerned about reports of upcoming military offensives in the country at a time when the risk of famine still persists. The agencies made the statement ahead of an international conference on Somalia, which opens today, Thursday, in London. Agencies say focus should be placed on humanitarian response to avert famine and to make sure the armed conflict is not escalated. Meanwhile, officials say Thursday's conference is an opportunity for the Somali government to present its security and political stability plans. Nick Kay is Britain's special envoy to the Horn of Africa region.
I think it's important to have an international conference now because Somalia is beginning a new political cycle, 4 years of new president, new parliament, but in particular for three reasons, really. I think first, world attention needs to be captured and kept on Somalia. There are so many competing priorities in the world that a conference like this is valuable for making sure people focus on Somalia and don't forget it. Secondly, I think it's really important to set the priorities for the next 4 years and how they will be achieved. And overall, this conference is important because it is a turning point, a watershed, if you like. After this, in 2017 onwards, Somalia is taking more and more responsibility for its own affairs. So it's going to take responsibility for its security. And the conference will put on the table for the first time the idea of a transition plan from AMISOM to Somali National Security Forces. It will agree a security pact, which is the structure of the future Somali security forces and how the international community will support it. So it's Somalia taking responsibility for its own destiny, and that's security, but also economic as well, and political.
So there is quite a lot of emphasis on security. Realistically, what can Somalia benefit? What's the roadmap for the next 4 years in terms of security, if you elaborate?
The conference will agree a security pact. At the heart of that, as you will know, is a political agreement made by the Somali federal government and the Somali federal member states about the future structure, size, and accountability of the police, army, and Dawish forces. And there will be discussion of how the international community can support delivery of this.
Do you think Somalia will be ready to take over security in 2 or 3 years from AMISOM?
Well, AMISOM and the African Union Peace and Security Commission have already established that after 2018 they want to start reducing the AMISOM presence until 2020. So the African Union have established already a timetable there. We believe very strongly that transition from AMISOM to the Somali National Security Forces should be based on conditions rather than a absolute and artificial timetable. So we anticipate over the next few years
that the Somali forces will gradually be more able to assume security responsibilities.
Explain to me the role that the United Kingdom is playing in Somalia, and in particular organizing these key high-profile conferences for Somalia. What is driving UK to make this effort?
Well, first I would say that the international effort on Somalia is truly an international partnership. But for the UK, yes. I mean, Somalia is a top African conflict priority for us because of the threats that an unstable, insecure Somalia poses, both to the region and more widely because of the affiliations of Al-Shabaab to Al-Qaeda and now a small ISIS present in the country. It's also a threat to international economy from piracy, and again we see that. And it is also a dire humanitarian crisis where currently there is a alert for famine, as you know, and a very hard drought situation.
Nick Kaye is Britain's special envoy to the Horn of Africa region. He spoke to Harun Maruf of VOA Somali Service. South Sudan President Salva Kiir has sworn in General James Ajongo as the country's new Army Chief of General Staff shortly after firing General Paul Malong as Army Chief on Tuesday without an explanation. Ajongo says he will work to end the fighting as well as implement the security arrangements stipulated in the August 2015 peace agreement. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Amid tight security in and around Presidential Palace or J1, General James Ajongo was sworn in front of a small audience of government officials by Chief Justice Chanorich Madut. Afterward, Ajongo told the waiting reporters he recognizes that the ongoing conflict is South Sudan's biggest problem.
I know it's a difficult task given the fact that the country is actually is in conflict by itself, but making use our good human resource, my colleagues behind here, I believe that they are right people who will be posted in the right places and will be able to manage the situation and will exit from this conflict.
Like his predecessor, General Malong, Ajongo hails from Awil in the former northern Bahr El Ghazal state. Presidential spokesman Ateni Wek Ateni describes Ajongo as a career soldier who has served in the army his entire life.
General Ajongo is the general of the SGLA, you know, he's the deputy, he's a former chief, deputy chief of general staff for administration and finance. He has never left an SGLA for one day. He has been in the SGLA since 1983, and he has never taken any government position like Malong.
As army chief, Ajongo says he will address the mass rooming of various armed groups across South Sudan who are fighting to topple President Salva Kiir's government.
The issue of the armed groups is in the agreement. So whether you want it or not, then you don't need them. You don't need them. So we are going to deal with them based on what is in the agreement.
Ajongo says the 2015 peace agreement is the only solution to the ongoing conflict. He says he will work to ensure that security arrangements as stipulated in the peace agreement are implemented, but says financial constraints could hamper his efforts.
Those who negotiated the agreement brought together the parties to sign the agreement. They know very well that you cannot implement this agreement without you having funds. Money.
General Ajongo is calling on the guarantors to the peace deal, including those in the international community and regional leaders, to fund implementation of the peace agreement. He says unless regional leaders and the international community back the government's efforts to implement the deal by funding the process, there will be little progress on the peace agreement. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Thursday, May 11th. Daybreak Africa time is 14 and a half minutes past the hour. A university researcher jailed last month in Uganda for allegedly insulting President Yoweri Museveni on Facebook has been granted bail. Halima Athumani reports from the courthouse in Kampala.
Stella Nyanzi entered the packed courtroom Wednesday looking frail. The typically outspoken activist had to be supported by three female wardens. Nyanzi collapsed during the break before Magistrate James Eremie read his ruling.
Exercising my discretion, I proceeded to allow the accused her bail, but on the following conditions,
One, the accused shall execute a bond, 10 million shillings, not cash.
Nyanzi's bail comes after 4 weeks behind bars. Nyanzi was arrested and charged with cyber harassment and offensive communication over a Facebook post in which she allegedly called President Yoweri Museveni a pair of buttocks. The post was part of an online campaign Nyanzi had launched calling on the president to live up to his campaign promise to provide free sanitary pads to poor girls. Human rights lawyer Nicholas Opio represented Nyanzi before the court. He said she suffers from hypertension and has had a bout of malaria.
We are happy that the court has finally released Stella on bail. We pray that the authorities do respect the orders of the court and not seek to rearrest Dr. Stella. And I think that now that she is out, we will then have a proper discussion on how to respond to the case before the court.
Before the magistrate ruling, the state attorney, Jonathan Mwaganya, made his conditions for Nyanzi's bail application clear.
Right now, she's alleged to be sick. But, Your Worship, should you find that release of the applicant on bail is tenable at this stage, she should be required to refrain during the subsistence of this case from making any adverse cyber attacks or any derogatory statements against the person of the victim in county or his close members of his household.
In a statement Wednesday, Amnesty International called the charges against Nyanzi ludicrous and an affront to freedom of expression. Amnesty said the charges should be dropped immediately. Nyanzi is expected to return to court May 25th. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Nigeria's information minister says the controversies surrounding President Muhammadu Buhari's letter to parliament is an unnecessary distraction. Lyle Mohammed says the contents of the letter are in compliance with the 1999 constitution. President Buhari left the country Sunday night for a follow-up medical checkup in London. The information minister's remarks follow criticism by lawmakers that the contents of the letter were not specific enough. They argue that the letter should have stated clearly that while the president was away, the power would be transferred to Vice President Yemi Osinbajo. But Information Minister Lyle Mohammed tells viewers Peter Clotty that President Buhari's letter meets the requirement of the law as stipulated in the Constitution.
I think the controversy is needless and it's a major distraction. What is important is that the president wrote a letter to 74 senators, and in the content, the operating sentence is compliance with Section 145, Subsection 1 of the Constitution. Any other thing absolutely irrelevant. Whatever I work or I use are irrelevant because Section 145.1 is very clear that when the president is not around, the vice president will act.
Well, Alhaji Lai Mohammed, they are saying that the president said the vice president will coordinate affairs. Does that mean that power has been transmitted to the vice president as constitutionally stipulated?
Absolutely beside the point. Once you say in compliance with Section 1451, you ask yourself, what does Section 145 subsection, what does it say? It would have been a different matter if the president simply said, I'm traveling for medical treatment. The doctors will determine my length of stay. While I am away, the vice president will be coordinating affairs. That would have been a different ballgame. Then probably the controversy would have been worse. But the president's letter was very clear. It says in compliance with Section 145, Subsection 1. So, frankly speaking, I think it's a needless controversy.
Alhaji Mohammed, some of the lawmakers are saying the letter should be returned for the wording to be changed to be specific enough. Others are saying it shouldn't. Will the presidency consider their request to have the wording changed?
I think a question has been drawn on the matter. When the Senate president said no, the operating sentence is in compliance with Section 145, Section 1.
The president said he is going away for medical leave, indefinite medical vacation, some are saying. Why shouldn't he just hand over power? Because it appears he is not fit for the office due to medical reasons. Your take?
those who say that should tell us which provision of the Constitution says that the fact that the president is going for medical treatment and he does not know how long it's going to take, therefore he should resign. They should tell us which provision of the Constitution is that.
Some are accusing the president of lack of transparency and that the president's health appears to have been shrouded in all kinds of secrecy. They are saying this because they said a precedent has been set before when a head of state unfortunately passed away while in power. And that is why they are asking for more information to know. What do you say to that?
I think they are simply comparing orange with apple.
Lai Mohammed is Nigeria's information minister. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. Executive directors from the World Bank recently approved a $50 million grant to provide direct food assistance to counter starvation and prevent hunger-related deaths during the ongoing famine in South Sudan. The money will help only some of the 4.9 million people in that country who are classified as food insecure. In Nigeria, people returning to their communities are facing the same problems after war has left homes and infrastructure destroyed. Kevin Enoch reports.
At the border between Nigeria and Cameroon, people wait to head back to their homes, but all too often, there are no homes to go home to.
I spent 3 years in Cameroon from 2014 to 2017. Then we decided to come with all my family. We paid for our transportation to come, even this small child. I paid 4,000 naira for his transport if the money is converted to naira. But because we want to serve our country, I gathered all my family with our belongings to our dear country, Nigeria. Now what we want from the government is to help us. We don't have wood to cook. We don't have anything in our hands, even soap to wash. As you see, the sign on my face is a sickness because I have no money to take care of it. So I left it like that. If possible, we want the government to open our roads and markets, not leave us like that in order to start up with our businesses.
There is precious little clean water. What there is must be brought in by relief agencies. The government's long-running war with Boko Haram has turned these people's hometown into rubble. Tents have replaced homes. Toilets are a hole in the ground surrounded by blankets.
We have about 444,000 internally displaced persons in the Ngala IDP camp. And in that whole number, all of them depend on the borehole that is behind us for potable water. So it is grossly inadequate. So it's very fundamental that issues that has to do with water be addressed as quickly as possible.
It is another example of food insecurity driven by conflict. To the east, South Sudan is already suffering under drought-related famine, and the situation is being made worse by similar conflicts.
In South Sudan, since their conflict erupted, 82 humanitarian workers have been killed, 15 this year alone. They are killing humanitarian workers, they are looting aid, they are not respecting the rules of war. We can't access those most in need because of the disrespect of international. So let the African governments put pressure on these groups to respect the humanitarian law.
But relief agencies say that even if the conflicts were to end tomorrow, they don't have the money to help the people in need all across East Africa. Kevin Enix, VOA News, Washington.
The African Union has developed a space policy as African countries such as Nigeria, South Africa, and Ethiopia continue to develop their own technologies. Nigeria has even said it will put an astronaut into space by 2030. Dr. Mahama Wadrigo, head of Division Science and Technology at the African Union Commission, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the specific goals of this policy and how he hopes it encourages inter-African cooperation.
The vision of AU itself is an integrated, prosperous and peaceful Africa, an Africa that is driven by its own citizens. Science and technology play a role into achieving that vision, and particularly space science and technology. If I can also be more specific to give you examples where science and technology education are contributing into the space program, we have, for instance, the Global Monitoring for Environment and Security, what we call GMES and Africa. GMES and Africa is one of the implementation initiative of Earth Observation segment of the African space program.
What are the specific policies, objectives, and goals, and how does it plan on reaching those?
The goals and objective of the African space policy is that it has two high-level policy goals, which is first to create a coordinated and integrated African space program that is responsive to the social, economic, political, and environmental needs of the continent, as well as being globally competitive. And secondly, to develop a regulatory framework that supports an African space program and ensure that Africa is a responsible and peaceful user of outer space. The policy itself, if we go more in the specific, is articulated under six main objectives. The first one is how to address user needs. The second one, accessing of space services. The third one is concerningly developing the regional market. The fourth one is to adopt good governance and management. The fifth one is about coordinating the African space arena. Lastly, promoting intra-Africa and international cooperation.
Egypt and South Africa are both working with Russia to develop their space programs, and Nigeria partnered with China to launch satellites. Is there any concern over foreign influence of these space programs?
I don't think a viable space program can be without international cooperation. I think it's in line with that you will see that many African countries will embark into cooperation with foreign entities, I mean, outside Africa, so that they can be able to address space matters. The fact that these are cross-cutting necessitates that most of the time imperative for collaborative work to take place.
About Nigeria, they've said they want to put an astronaut in space by 2030. How feasible is this?
Member states are, of course, entitled to, you know, their own goal and objective. We want to ensure that when they do it, they put the flavor of inter-African cooperation in there.
That was Dr. Mahaman Rodrigo, Head of Division Science and Technology at the African Union Commission. He was speaking to Ricky Shryak from Addis Ababa. In the wake of FBI Director James Comey's firing by President Donald Trump, Senate Democrats are demanding a special prosecutor for the ongoing probe of Russian meddling in last year's presidential election. As VOA's Michael Bowman reports, Republicans are responding with caution to an explosive situation that is evolving by the hour.
President Trump cited Comey's handling of last year's investigation of Hillary Clinton's emails as a prime reason for his dismissal. Democrats like Senator Chuck Schumer suspect another reason.
The question is, why did it happen last night? We know Director Comey was leading an investigation in whether the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians, a serious offense. Were those investigations getting too close to home for the president?
Some Democrats are comparing Trump's actions to those of former President Richard Nixon, who resigned in 1974 amid the Watergate scandal. That watershed episode spurred a law allowing for an independent special prosecutor to handle politically sensitive investigations, something Democrats say is needed now.
A special prosecutor is not subject to day-to-day supervision by the Attorney General or anyone else at the Justice Department. That means the special prosecutor would have much greater latitude in who he can subpoena, which questions they ask, how to conduct an investigation. The appointment of a special prosecutor would be a welcome step in the right direction.
Several Republican lawmakers also have questioned the timing of Comey's firing. But Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell notes it was Democrats who reacted with outrage, and some even called for Comey's departure when the FBI director announced the reopening of the Clinton email probe less than 2 weeks before the November election.
That's VOA's Michael Bowman reporting. That's it for this Thursday, May 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the crew, I'm James Botti wishing you a lovely day.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me every weekday evening for Africa News Tonight from the Voice of America. It's a thorough summary of the day's events, featuring interviews with the people making news in Africa. You'll hear every side of an issue. And of course, Sunny Young drops by with the sunny side of sports. Plus, we have special features on science, business, Africans abroad, and comments from listeners like you. So please join me every weekday for Africa News Tonight from the Voice of America.